Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Pull Up Podcast. Sorry, I'm hearing an echo here. Gotta get rid of that. But anyways, we are joined today with Justin Salkin. How are we doing today, Justin?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing fantastic here. Nice little bit of rain we had, but we moved on since then.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day.
We're here to break down the postseason seedings that are coming in full swing here. We have tight races in both the Eastern and Western Conference. And I saw a stat today, which is actually kind of mind-blowing. It's if the playoffs started today, it would be the first time since the 2004-2005 season that all 16 playoff teams had winning records.
That's stunning.
That, to me, is mind-blowing. But let's look at the Eastern Conference here, because right now we have the Chicago Bulls on the outside looking in. They're two games out with three games left. I don't see them making the postseason unless, you know, Minnesota or Detroit or Indiana really collapses here. Do you see any way the Chicago Bulls make the playoffs? And if not, what is your kind of, you know, what would you do with that franchise moving forward in the offseason?
I don't think they're going to make it. I think they're too far behind now, you know, behind the Pacers and Pistons. The Pacers are playing well. The Pistons are playing well. They have Tobias Harris now in Detroit. I really don't think the Bulls are going to make it. They never seem like they can get their stride this year under Hoiberg. I know they've had a lot of injuries, obviously, but, you know, they also had injuries under Thibodeau, too, so that's got to reflect poorly on Hoiberg, at least somewhat. I think they need to really look at overturning the roster. They might want to consider if they should look at trading Derrick Rose. I think they need to look at if they want to move on. And the one good thing is if they want to trade Rose, just as an example, there's going to be so many teams with cap space this summer that they could easily jump on a situation where the team doesn't sign somebody and now they're looking for a piece, you know, kind of later after free agency settles.
Right. I mean, I agree with you. I do not see the Chicago Bulls making the postseason at all. And it's unfortunate because they was, you know, so good for a while there, and it kind of just, you know, slowly went downhill. I know Thibodeau's probably at home, you know, laughing because he's not a fan of that ownership. It feels that this might be something that they deserve. But let's look at the Pacers and the Pistons here. They're both fighting for the 7th-8th spot. Obviously, they'd want to get into the 7th spot to avoid that first-round matchup with Cleveland. Who do you think is better suited to take on the Cleveland Cavaliers between the Pacers and Pistons?
Between those two teams, I'd rather be the Pistons if I was facing the Cavaliers for a couple of reasons. First is, I mean, I know LeBron gets up for Tobias Harris, but he'll probably extra get up for Paul George in the playoffs, another great player. And then the Pistons having Drummond, I think he's a big that can give Cleveland's front line some trouble. Might have to force them to play bigger when they play better when they go a little smaller, I think. I think he can give them some trouble. He can neutralize Tristan Thompson a little bit. And Thompson's a guy who I really think the Cavaliers get going most when, you know, he's getting offensive rebounds and he's really in the flow. And Drummond might be a guy who could take him out of the flow a little bit. So I think the Pistons might give them a tougher matchup. I still think Cleveland moves on pretty easily in the first round, but I say they'd get a tougher matchup.
No, on the flip side here, Toronto has struggled to get out of the first round. And so they would essentially be going up against the Pacers, a team that has been battle-tested, as we pointed out with Paul George. You know, he had the freak injury with USA Basketball, kind of his bounce-back season here. I would say the Pacers weren't as good as they were hoping this season, but here they are. They're in the dance, playing a team who's notorious for collapsing come postseason. Do you see the Pacers giving the Raptors any trouble in this series here?
I do think they'll give them some trouble, but I think the Raptors are going to move on. I think that losing a couple times in the first round, I think they're better than people think they are. And if you really look back at it, everyone expected the Nets to beat the Raptors 2 years ago. Everyone was saying their experience would carry the day. And then they did win that series, obviously, against Toronto. So it's really only one series. And it was bad. It was a very bad series against Washington last year. But it's really only one series where you could look at them and say, wow, they really just came out and didn't produce. So I think the Raptors are going to be better than people think come postseason.
Well, there's one fan of the Toronto Raptors it's Coach Greg Popovich who's predicting that they will be representing the Eastern Conference. And I don't know if you saw that exchange at the end of the game against the Spurs there, but he went up to Dwayne Casey, shook his hand, and said, you know, I think you guys are going to, you know, be in the finals. You know, no BS. I really believe that. How much weight do you put into that, or do you disagree with Popovich that, you know, the Raptors aren't really equipped yet to represent the Eastern Conference Finals, the Eastern Conference in the finals?
I'm actually surprised he just came out and said that, you know, rather than just, you know, a lot of coaches just kind of steer clear of things like that. So I'm surprised he was so direct. You know, obviously he's a great coach. He has plenty of credibility, so you have to take it seriously. I think they're going to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, I do. But I still think at the end of the day, Cleveland's going to have too much to offer and that they're going to win the East.
Now, let's look at this middle section here, because the middle section is a little crazy. You have Atlanta, Boston, Miami, and Charlotte. They're all fighting for the seeds against each other. And the irony here for Boston is their last three games are against Atlanta, Miami, and Charlotte. Right now, Atlanta's sitting in the third seed, Charlotte's in the sixth, Boston's in four, Miami's in five. How do you see this playing out the last three games of the season? And in your opinion, who needs to have the home court to advance? Or let me rephrase this. Which teams out of those four do you think can win a series not being the home team?
I hate to not answer, but I really do think that any of them could win home or road. Obviously, they're all so close together. I actually give the edge to Boston. I think Boston is going to advance to the second round. And actually, Charlotte, I mean, they're playing very well ever since they got Portland Lee. He really rounds out the lineup. I know Atlanta's there, too. You know, Miami's good, but I actually don't think they're as good as some people think. I almost wonder if they get too much credit just because, you know, the name Dwayne Wade, the name Chris Bosh, Eric Spoelstra, his name as well. I think they get a little too much credit, you know, based on their past pedigree. I don't see how they're better than these other three teams, at least significantly so, but I almost wonder if it's portrayed that way, that everyone just assumes they're going to get that matchup with Cleveland. I think that Boston and Charlotte are going to get through. I really do. Unless they play each other, of course.
I think so, too, just because of the way they're both playing. The only downfall to our opinions here is that the Atlanta Hawks are actually the best road team out of the four with 21-18. Boston and Miami are both 500, and Charlotte is actually 16-21 on the road. But the further our points here that we think Miami might have an early exit here is they have the lowest points per game. And we know when it comes postseason, or just I wouldn't even say postseason, this season in general, you need to be an offensive-type team. That seems to be the way the league's trending. The old, still, you know, lockdown defensive teams aren't really producing the wins as they should or used to. But you still got to produce on both sides of the court. And Miami is the only team in the playoffs right now in the Eastern Conference that scores under 100 points per game. But granted, they do have a good differential of plus 1.2, which is still worse than those other four teams. Atlanta is plus 3.8, Boston's plus 3.3, and Charlotte's plus 2.5. So I agree with you here. I think that, you know, we kind of just ride the name Dwayne Wade, and I know Bosch is out. If he comes back, that's going to change the landscape dramatically, and that's when I would be afraid of the Miami Heat. If Chris Bosch is inserted back into that lineup, it's tough here. I really believe that whoever gets home court out of these four teams is going to be the two winning teams. I think Charlotte just hasn't been there. They haven't experienced that. I believe Al Jefferson's never played in the postseason. Nicholas Batum has, but not has much success. And then Miami, Boston, Atlanta all have been there and all have some experience. You know, Boston was in the postseason last year, saw what an early exit looked like. And I think they're hungry this year, and they're a much better team, and they play for each other, and they just won't give up. When it comes down to the fourth quarter, they're down 20. They're still going to play harder than any team. It's going to be a battle.
And one thing I mean, Boston, too, is ironically people usually like the superstar-type player in the postseason, but I think one good thing about Boston is where you don't know where the ball is going and a team moves it around and plays as a team like that. It makes it harder to make adjustments from game to game. You know, if they keep isolating Wade and isolating Joe Johnson, and then it's Tuesday and they do that in game one, and then you come back on Friday for game two, you have 2 days to kind of look at how they were running the same things over and over. But when a team is more unpredictable that way, it's hard to just make those kinds of adjustments game to game.
You're going to have to pick and choose who you want to eliminate from the game, you know. Do you just double IT and Isaiah Thomas, that is, and just hope that no one else beat you? You know, it's a really tough team to defend here because, as you said, there's no superstar. This isn't, you know, going against the Indiana Pacers. Let's all put our chips in on Paul George here and hope other people beat us. They're a tough team to defend and tough team to read on paper, but it's definitely a battle. All four teams there have 32 losses. Two of them have 45 wins. Two of them have 44 wins. You got 3 to 4 games left in the season, and I really am curious to see how these matchups play out, and then we can sit here and pick and choose. But let's jump to an argument we had the other day on Twitter here, and I said I don't see Cleveland. Well, let's back up. Do you think that Cleveland's going to be representing the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals?
Do I think Cleveland will win the East or go to the Finals?
Yes.
I do think they'll win the East. I think the thing with Cleveland, and I really think part of the reason they're up and down, you don't really hear this much, is that you look at how LeBron's won the East, what, the last 5 years now. And they're such a heavy favorite to win. They won it so easily last year after kind of, you know, starting the season basically on sabbatical for half a year. And it's kind of a situation where it's so easy to just, you know, get into bad habits and get complacent because it's almost like, what are we playing for 82 games? Whereas in the West, you have the Warriors and Spurs fighting for the one seed, fighting for, you know, to break the Bulls' record. It gives them something to play for. And then even on that end, the Cavaliers are thinking, well, we don't really think anyone can challenge us in the East. And we can't really play for home court because we're so far behind Golden State and San Antonio. It's so easy to just get content and not really have goals. And you build bad habits that way. But I think when the playoffs start, that all changes. And I really think you'll see a different team, a more focused team from game to game. Because when the Cavaliers are playing their best, they're really, really tough to beat.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously LeBron at full flight, and then you have Love and Kyrie. I mean, it works when they're really engaged in the game. I just don't think they do it all the time. So maybe they develop some bad habits, but I think they'll win the East. And then, I mean, LeBron did give the Warriors a very, very tough time last year, and I think he's every bit as great still, and I think he's really going to give it a tougher. It'll be a tougher final than people think. They're the underdog, but I really do it.
Yeah,
yeah,
no, it's definitely
going to
be a tough finals. I just don't see a way. And let me ask you this, and this is why I'm leading that. I said Cleveland doesn't really stand the chance against the Spurs and Warriors when I tweeted that the other day, and you said you respectfully disagree. I think coaching has to play a huge factor into this. I mean, it's a 7-game series. There's a lot of adjustments that need to take place. They're basically, the Cleveland Cavaliers, that is, they're basically dealing with a rookie coach who's, you know, he's been around the league as an assistant and been on some good teams as an assistant coach. He's played in NBA games in the postseason. But until you're at the, you know, the head seat there, you can't say you've done it. Now, granted, we could flip it the tables here and say, you know, last year Steve Kerr didn't have any experience either, and look what he was able to accomplish. But I just feel like, you know, if you're going against Kerr, against Popovich in a 7-game series, or just the coaching staffs of both those teams in general, I think Cleveland's going to be at a huge disadvantage. And I think this is where coaching really plays a factor. You know, everyone always says, you know, you don't really need to be a good coach in the NBA, you just need good players. But when it comes to a 7-game series, it really comes down to managing minutes and being able to control that.
And I do agree with coaching. That is a big disadvantage for Cleveland. I think it matters a lot more than it mattered 10 or 15 years ago. Because, you know, 10, 15, maybe 20 years ago, you had a lot of guys isolating. So if guys are just going one-on-one, the coach is less of a factor. But now the systems are so intricate and involved the way teams are playing that I think the coaches are a big deal because they separate teams, you know. Look at a team like the Celtics, let Brad Stevens help separate them. And then even with the Warriors, not for nothing, Kerr made a great adjustment in the Grizzlies series last year and he put Bogut on Tony Allen. So we know that he could do that if he has to. We know that he could say, I'm going to put, you know, Harrison Barnes or something on Tristan Thompson if I want to put a bigger guy on LeBron or, you know, however he wants to do it. We don't know what Luke could do because we haven't seen it.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely going to be something to keep an eye on. But let's jump over to the Western Conference here because the Western Conference is still battling. And for Memphis's sake, outside of all the injuries they had to sustain, they are lucky that the season's almost over because if this season was going another week or two, they would probably be the odd team out and Houston, Utah, Dallas, and Portland would all be representing the 5, 6, 7, 8 seed. But having said that, currently as it sits, Houston is the odd man out. They're one game behind Utah. Dallas and Utah are both 39-38 in the 7-8 seed. Portland is sitting in the 6th seed, only half a game back from Memphis. And you got to think, Portland's trying to push up to the 5th seed so they can play the Clippers instead of the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think most would rather play the Clippers than the Thunder, just based on the history. And I know it's unfortunate because Blake Griffin came back. Let me ask you this, Justin. Who do you think is going to be the odd team out here?
I agree with you. I think the Blazers will pass the Grizzlies. Damian Lillard is unbelievable. He deserves a few seconds. He's just been absolutely incredible this year. I know Stotts gets a lot of credit for the Blazers, and he really deserves it, but Lillard's just been incredible. I mean, how many people thought he would just be a high-scoring volume guard on a 25-win team, and he's just leading this team. And there's no other veteran leader this year with all those guys got from last year. He is just really carrying them, so he's been great. I do think Memphis slips a little bit to 6th. Even though I would like to see another Clippers-Grizzlies series, however compromised the Grizzlies are. But I don't think we're going to get it. I think the Grizzlies will fall to 6th, and unfortunately I think they'll be a pretty easy out for the Thunder. And then I really hope Utah can see through. I'd like to see – I love Dirk Nowitzki, but I do not love Darren Williams, so I'd love to see Dallas slip out and maybe Utah get in, but we'll see how it shakes out.
So who do you think is going to be missing the postseason? You got the Rockets down as being the odd team out that's going to not make the postseason?
I think it'll be Dallas missing out. But, we have to wait for the end.
Yeah, I agree with you. But, looking at the remainder of the schedule, I've been saying this for about a week or two now. When I did the post on HoopsCritic.com about this, I kind of looked at the schedule for those four teams, figure out who would be the odd team out. Plus, Dallas has sustained more injuries with Darren Williams and Chandler Parsons. They've been playing great behind J.J. Barrera, but that's not going to get you into the postseason. And I think Houston's going to just find a way to get in there. And maybe Utah slides up to the 7th seed and plays a tough San Antonio Spurs. It would actually probably be a good matchup for the Utah Jazz here because they both play that slow style basketball, take time off the possession clock, play strong defense, and I think that'd be a really good matchup for the Utah Jazz. So let me ask you this question, Justin. Do you see any upsets this first round in the Western Conference?
I don't. I really don't. I think that the Grizzlies are just so decimated, I just don't think they're going to have enough horses to compete with one of the top four, and I don't think the Mavericks and Jazz are good enough, and the Rockets are like a tease, because obviously they've been so good since they got Harden, that it's just kind of stunning that they've just fallen off this way, but I guess this is what they are, after all this time, so I think the top four teams are going to have it easy. I know Lillard's great, but when playoff time comes around, he's really the only guy that you have to game plan for. I think, one of the top four teams will take advantage of the Blazers, too. So I really think the top four teams are going to have it pretty comfortably in the West.
Wait, was that a diss at Al Farouk Aminu?
I do like Aminu, too, but I was messing with you.
I agree. I think it's going to be pretty easy for the top four teams here. The question is just going to be, which of those top four teams is actually going to lose a game in a series? I can see Portland winning one against Oklahoma City Thunder, maybe a game three in Portland. Lillard goes off or catches the Thunder sleeping, I don't see the Clippers losing a single game to the Grizzlies. And then same thing with Houston, Dallas, or Utah. I don't see either three of those teams winning a game against Golden State or San Antonio.
I think Lillard's good for at least a game, maybe two, because he could just go for 40, 50 points.
Right. So let's look at the second round here. It's going to be Golden State, Clippers, Spurs, and Thunder. How do you see that shaking out in your eyes?
Yeah, I do think it'll go to form. Warriors, Clippers, I actually think the Warriors are going to mow them down. I really do think that. There's always that bad blood between those two teams, and now that the Warriors have gotten up at a level, it's like they take every game against the Clippers personal. They lost them in 2014, too. I think the Warriors are going to mow them down. I'm higher on the Clippers than most. I just still think that's how it's going to shake out. The Thunder, I actually think, are going to give the Spurs an extremely tough series, tougher than people think. They might even be in position to win the series, but I think the Spurs will win 6 or 7 game, very tough series.
Do you see that the Thunder can possibly beat the Spurs?
I think they can get close. I mean, obviously Durant and Westbrook are just phenomenal. I know in 2012 they had Harden, but, you know, they beat the Spurs that year. You know, and their athleticism presents problems for the Spurs, who are still an older group. I think they're going to give them a tremendously tough challenge. I really do.
I honestly see Oklahoma City losing in five games. The Spurs are just too good, and they match up so well with the Thunder. And I'm probably the biggest Kawhi Leonard fan in the league, and I just think he's really going to give Durant a hard and long series. I think we're going to see uncharacteristic type series from Durant where he's taking 25 shots to get 20 points. It's just going to be one of those types of series for him. It's going to be very frustrating. And for the Eastern Conference's sake, he's going to bolt and go sign in the East with some team. Whether it's the Knicks, whether it's the Celtics, whoever else has cap room, you know, he's got to get to the East if he wants to win a title.
I think you're missing a team in the Atlantic Division. No, that's not going to happen.
Is it easiest route to the finals, though, if you go East? So we both kind of have Golden State and San Antonio here, which will essentially, to me, be the NBA Finals matchup. I don't think there's going to be a better matchup the rest of the postseason. I think it's what we're all waiting to see. How do you see it playing out, and explain how each team will win?
I think it's really all about pace, and I really think that's the key. And I know that Hoops critic himself, Brian Gelsinger, said this. You know, I think the pace is the key, because if you look at that game where the Spurs beat the Warriors about a month ago, that highly anticipated Saturday night game, they kept the pace down. They kept the score low, and I know Curry missed a lot of shots, but that's kind of what they have to do, minimize the amount of possessions, grind it out, try to go bigger. I mean, if Aldridge is posting up, you can give that Warriors frontline problems, and if you could force them to play Bogut, go a little bigger at times, it gives you a better chance to go bigger and slow the game down. Obviously, the Warriors want it a little quicker. I mean, they could grind out a game, too. That's part of why they're so great, but I think it's really about pace. And then the Spurs trying to work Aldridge over on the Warriors and then causing matchup nightmares with Kawhi Leonard, too.
And how do you see the Warriors winning this game? Basically just running the Spurs out of the gym?
Yeah, just playing their game. They're the younger team, maybe at that point a fresher team. And just playing the way they always play, playing quicker, trying to play small. I mean, if Green is able to hold Aldridge reasonably down and they're able to go smaller, that makes it easier for them. And I really think pace and then how much teams can manipulate the size matchups they have. That's the key. I think the Warriors will win, but that's the key.
Well, it's actually kind of funny because the Warriors are allowing 104 points per game. The Spurs are scoring 104 points per game. So according to that stat, the Spurs will still get their 104, and the Warriors are still going to let up 104. But the question now becomes, who wins the battle of the Warriors with 115 per game or the Spurs at around 98 per game? Probably even lower than that. I think it's maybe 92. And I think that goes to your point. It's all going to be the pace. And this is where I think the postseason kind of helps the Spurs, not only the fact that they've been to the postseason every year, Duncan and Pop have been together, but it's a different game. It's a more physical game. The refs let some things go. The games tend to slow down a little bit. You know, the running gun teams, the 7 seconds or less type teams tend to flail come postseason, which made the Warriors win last year so special because they were really the first Mike D'Antoni-inspired type team to really win a title or even compete for a title. I mean, his son's team's never made it to the finals. They made it to the conference finals a couple times, but that style of play never really elevated to win a title. And here we are, if this matchup ends up happening in the Western Conference, you're going to have the old style versus the new style. And honestly, I cannot wait. All my friends and I will get together, and that's going to be the series to watch. I think that will be more interesting than whatever finals matchup that comes.
Yeah, that's going to be a fantastic series. I mean, every time those two teams play, it should be must-see TV. And that's got to be a series that you tune into and watch as many possessions as you can. It's going to be unbelievable. One thing the Spurs have, too, even though I do think you can't pick against the Warriors after winning it last year and now they're threatening the record. You can't. But one thing the Spurs do have. Okay, yeah, you can. I'll pick the other way. We'll definitely see how it goes.
We can do a friendly bet. We'll figure something out on Twitter. We'll get the people involved. But I am sold on the Spurs this year. I'm all on the Spurs wagon. I think they're going to beat the Warriors this year if they end up matching up in a series. Now, granted, both teams have to make it to that point, but I'll let you finish your point about the Spurs.
Yeah, I was going to say one thing they do have, even though I think they won't win, is in Leonard and Green, you probably can't ask for a better combination of two players to throw at Curry at the end of the game to guard him.
Right. And it's not even that. Like, so we all witnessed the Celtics beating the Warriors the other night. And what makes the Celtics such a good matchup to the Warriors, both teams almost built the same way. But what Boston's able to do that most teams aren't, and I think the Spurs fall in this category as they can do this, is Boston can switch on every pick and roll because they have so many good defensive guards. It doesn't matter, you know, if it's Jay Crowder, if it's Marcus Smart, if it's Avery Bradley. They could, or even Evan Turner for a moment. You know, it doesn't matter who they switch on the Warriors' ball handlers. They're able to pressure the guards, and they have good defensive guards. And I think that's where, you know, the team like the Spurs are able to do. They're able to do something like that against the Warriors in a series. And you know, Pop's going to find a way to mix and match. And it's not about changing, confusing Steph Curry, getting him out of his rhythm. And I think they'll be successful in doing that. And you know, I'll be curious to see. But we got a couple minutes here, Justin. And I wanted to ask you a couple things about some of your posts that you've been putting up on Hoops Critics. You were kind of running through all these non-playoff teams and kind of giving their fans an outlook, what to look forward to next season. And you mentioned today that the news that the Nets here are resting Brooke Lopez and Thaddeus Young for the rest of the season. In a minute or so, can you just explain what the Nets fans can look forward to coming up in this offseason?
You know, I think for them, it's really about trying to build a base where they could become, like, even just a mediocre team next year. Because, you know, looking at their draft pick situation, it's really so nasty. I mean, pretty much every pick goes to Boston, and then they have swaps with Boston, and second-round picks are being sent out, and they have so many picks going out that even if they said, okay, let's trade Lopez and Young, because you're not trading anybody else in the roster for picks. You know, let's trade these guys for picks. Even if you do that, you're still so far in the hole. And you still don't have lottery picks. I mean, you're basically like the Sixers, you know, without the lottery picks and without the high upside guys, right? So that's really bad. So I think they need to try to kind of build forward through free agency, as tough as it is. Try to get guys who are, you know, decent starters next year, high to mid-end starters. Plug them in and hope you win a few more games, and then maybe the summer after that, try to take, you know, like another incremental step off that. Kevin Durant's not coming. That was a little bit of a gratuitous joke before. So it's just kind of trying to take it step by step, and hopefully you get to 35 wins next year and then see what you can do after that. It's not that fun, but that's really all they have.
Right. And let me ask you this one last question before we get out of here. We've got about 2 minutes left. Out of all the teams who have missed the postseason or are scheduled to miss the postseason, because let's be real, you know, the Rockets and Mavericks are still fighting and Jazz are still fighting. The Bulls are most likely out, but they're not eliminated as of today. Which of these teams that are missing the postseason do you think are best equipped to make the postseason next year and to make that step forward?
I would say if the Jazz missed the postseason, I think them, because they had so many injuries this year, Gobert was out. They still need better point guard play. I mean, they Sheldon Mack playing point guard, they might make the playoffs, which in a point guard league, that's pretty tough to do. So I think they're the most obvious one to me that if they miss, I think they're the team that could make it. But I do think the Bulls also have a very good shot at being better next year and making it, because I know they might take some steps back personnel-wise, and they'll try to get guys who they think kind of fit with Hoiberg and try to, you know, go through with their system. So that's who I think.
I kind of agree with you there. I also think Minnesota is going to make a nice leap. Especially if Ego Wiggins takes that next step in his junior year, and, you know, Cat's in an absolute monster with them. And, you know, but those young teams, you always wait and you wait and you wait and you wait. And, you know, you hope it finally comes together before comes time for that second contract and they start losing some of those pieces on the free agent market, especially with the new salary cap jumping up. And basically every team is given a shot at one max deal contract. So. But that'll do it for us here at the Pull Up Podcast. Justin, I can't thank you enough. You can catch him over at Hoops Critic. Follow him on Twitter at Brooklyn Beat. Or Brooklyn Beat, right? No F?
No, there's an S.
And that'll do it for us here. And I'm sure Justin will be back on as the postseason comes to a fold. And we're sitting here breaking down the games by game. So everybody take care. And again, thank you, Justin, for hopping on with me.
No problem. Good to talk to you.